When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You can't stop the spoilers any more than you can stop the sun from setting. You should heed those wise words from the late, great Shmi Skywalker. May she rest in power, because this podcast contains spoilers from a galaxy far, far away about the series Star Wars Visions on Disney Plus, as well as the series What If, also on Disney Plus, as well as who knows what else we're going to end up talking about. Episode 5 of X-Ray Vision, the Crooked Podcast, where we dive deep into your favorite shows, movies, comics, and pop. Sorry, the Odin sleep took me. Today we're covering more of Disney Plus dazzling anime anthology, Star Wars Visions. But first, welcome back to the show, writer and podcaster Cody Ziegler. Zig, how are you?
Yo, I'm doing great, man. Good. I rewatched my two favorite of the Star Wars Visions last night, just on a whim. Yes! So, like, I love that we get to talk about it. I made screen caps of my favorite little evil dude and posted to Twitter. So I'm very excited about today.
I can't wait to talk about it. But first, on Previously On, let's talk about What If. What If Episode 7, the Party Thor episode, What If Thor Were Only Child? Quick recap. Odin, rather than raise Loki on his own, sends him back to Jotunheim, to his people, to live an authentic Jotun life. And it's hard to escape the fact that that clearly should have been what he did. That was seemed like a better move.
Yeah. Really getting ahead of all the problems.
Yeah, because Loki is like, I know Thor has some issues he needs to work through, but Loki seems absolutely like a balanced individual. Yes, he's a Jotun, but it's like he's feels comfortable in his own skin. That's great. Odin falls into the Odin sleep as he is off to do. And then during this time, Frigga and Thor decide, well, it's time to party. Frigga goes off to her sister's house to drink varietal wines, while Thor goes to Midgard, a.k.a. Earth, to throw a giant party. He meets Jane Foster. There are massive sparks. This is one of the horniest Marvel properties to date. In any, like, MCU, any MCU property, show, movie, whatever, up there with Winter Soldier, I think this is one of the horniest ones we've seen yet. A lot of cooking up, a lot of coupling up going on.
Also, it's in Vegas, so, like, it's already, like, set to be like, yo, you can get weird here. You can get weird with some space aliens. Yeah, it was great.
Let it happen. You know, everybody's Skrulls are having fun. The Grandmaster's having a great time.
Yeah.
And as this is going on, Maria Hill, in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. because of on the field injury to Nick Fury, is trying to get Thor and this large, chaotic party of aliens and gods to leave the planet immediately. She hits Nick Fury's space beeper, calls Captain Marvel, and eventually they get everybody out of there. And Thor manages to evade any kind of repercussions for throwing an illicit party. Frigga is fooled by his excuse that he was just studying. But then at the end, we get the stinger that Infinite Vision, who is in the guise of Space Ultron from Annihilation Conquest, has arrived. And surely things are going to get bad. I love this episode, Zig.
Yeah.
Because as I told you in our talk before we hit record, I'm one of those weird people that my favorite comics were always the comics when, like, the bottle comic when the X-Men would go shopping, when all the X-ladies would just be like, let's go to the mall.
Yeah,
fuck
yeah,
it. It's been tough out here. Sentinel's trying to kill us all the time. Let's go to the mall. And I'm like, yes. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I think Marvel really shines, because like everyone has made this comparison for decades, but it's like, you know, Marvel is like people on the ground that happen to get powers, whereas DC is like God. So it's fun being like, yeah, you know, Hank McCoy needs to go get some new boots. So he has to go with like he needs to go to like, you know, Foot Locker to get some shoes or whatever. Like, it's fun seeing Tony Stark just hang out and like have his shack or do his thing. It's like, it was fun just seeing like this version of like the Marvel swimsuit edition, but it's like, you know, it's just them hanging out, turning up and being fuckboys in Vegas for however long extended period of time. And also it's they're tapping back into like what I finally think is what making the ECU work, which is everyone's having fun now. Like,
yes,
you know, it's not just like Natalie Portman, it's not just showing up. Like, everyone's actually seemed to be having very, like, the voice acting for this episode was like very good. And also it seems like everyone's having fun. Yeah. It's like people are like having fun. So it's nice seeing like, yeah, this big giant space Viking. Yeah, he's a big party boy in the comics. And like, I love that they were channeling like young Thor in this What If episode.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I love the, again, this is one of the horniest and most romantic MCU properties episodes ever. Mm-hmm. I really thought the relationship between Jane and Thor in this was like surprisingly layered and well done. It's like, mm-hmm. listen, Jane is a badass. She's an elite scientist and physicist who's been studying a strange phenomenon for many years, and she knows a lot about it. And really against her better judgment, she's just like falling for a himbo. You know what I mean?
It
feels very related to me. She's, you know, like, this guy, he's bad news a little bit, but he's pretty hot.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a bad boy, but you know, he's just a partier. That's all he likes to have. He likes his people to have a good time. That's his big fault. That's his big sin. He likes to have a good time.
And so I love their relationship. Other fine pairings are Darcy and Howard the Duck. A lot of questions here. Yeah. About what the legal status of this relationship is. I mean, like, you can do anything in Vegas, right? Like,
yeah,
but I'm not sure, like, the paper, has the paperwork come through on this yet? I'm not, this feels like an annulment waiting to happen.
Yeah, it was definitely a decision made in the heat of passion. I also, this is like the little small things. Like, I like that the Frost Giants are like just chill dudes now. Like, no pun intended. Like, I like they were like spinning the carousel and like spinning that around. And like, I like that Loki's like a laid back, like, sort of like, you know, Prince bro now. Like, I loved all that stuff.
I mean, it was really, Odin should have sent Loki back. Like, he never should have kidnapped him.
Yeah.
Why did that happen, Odin? Like, a lot of things that Odin has to answer for over the years, including, you know, trapping Hela, like, under Asgard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, like, kidnapping Loki, I think, is up there. Because, like, clearly, he would have been fine. And then just, like, raise your son. Like, stop falling asleep when you... do strenuous activity for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Stop falling asleep for like 3 weeks, and like maybe be a father to your son who clearly needs a little guidance.
You should be the Odin parent. Maybe that's what you should do. You should fall into the Odin responsibility and will be Odin forced to raise your kid.
Do the Odin chores.
Yeah.
Other stuff I loved. I loved the inclusion. I love that Fandral has a goat. Gary the Goat. I mean, in the comics, Thor has Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder, who are his two goats that pull him through space.
Yep.
Which people, I don't think, if you've never read a Thor comic, you may not understand how weird it is. Like, just going off of the MCU version of Thor, there are space sharks. There are goats that can pull you through intergalactic space. There's a lot of weird shit that goes on in Thor comics, and it was good to see some goat representation. I loved Surtur, like, randomly just having the hots for the Statue of Liberty.
You're finally see them use comedic license for like these characters. Like, yeah, like, you know, usually the jokes in Marvel is like, you know, it's a moments of like levity. It's like, you know, it's the Falcon and Winter Soldier in the backseat making fun of Steve as he like hits on the girl. It's not like, it would be funny if this giant, you know, fire demon hit on another giant thing, which would be like the Statue of Liberty. Like, it's complete cartoonish in the best way possible, and I loved all that. But speaking of like the comic, the Thor comics of it all, like, I like that for the first time we got to see like a god level fight. Like, we don't really see that in the MCU. Like, we got to see like someone gets punched and they fly across the globe. Like, I like that we finally get to see Miss Captain Marvel and Thor let loose with their power set in that way.
That was fucking epic. And I also love, you know, like, this is, again, not to knock other companies that also do live action and animated stuff, but moving the fight to, like, the desert, mm-hmm. that's a very Marvel thing to do. That's something
always,
heroes care about in Marvel. Yeah. Whereas in some other things, it'd be like, why don't we just fight here in the middle of Vegas and kill everyone?
Yeah, let's get some building. Let's get some building production value of them collapsing.
Captain Marvel, who would win that fight in a flat-out battle in space or anywhere, on the moon, wherever they can do it, that they can just cut loose? Who wins?
It seems like in the MCU, it seems like Captain Marvel is, from what I've gathered, is like the strongest one. Like, you know, the one that, you know, she went toe-to-toe with you know, Thanos when he had the Infinity Gauntlet. Like, really, Thor was having a hard time with, you know, Cap and Iron Man. It seems like the bar is, like, now the power level is, like, Captain Marvel. But if it's, like, comic books, I think it's Thor, because, like, you know, him, like, it made me think of the that run where him, there's a comic run where young Thor, current Thor, and, like, future King Thor fight Thor, Gore the God Butcher. And, like, it's like, you know, they get punched and they fly across the solar system. They're, like, diving through the sun. Like, it makes you feel like a god level cosmic fight. So, like, that is what we're going up with. And, like, I don't necessarily think that Captain Marvel is that strong in the comics. I may be wrong. I haven't read her in a couple of years, but, like, it seems like, cinematic wise, Captain Marvel's got to be the strongest in, like, comic books. Yeah. I think Thor feels very much like a god.
Yeah, I remember the first time I was really like, oh shit, they're powering Captain Marvel up pretty high in the comics was when Bendis ended his run on New Avengers with, like, giant size New Avengers number whatever. It was like basically closing the book on it. They go, and so this is after Siege, and Madame Mask has, like, run to go see her dad, Count Nefaria, because, like, all the evil villains are on the run now, and the heroes are triumphant. And so the New Avengers just do, like, a quick raid on Count Nefaria's condo. Now, Count Nefaria, for those of you who don't know, he's basically immortal, 100 class strength, a evil villain, often a Thor villain, because he is just extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. And he, like, energy shocks Captain Marvel, like, as after the raid starts, and just like blasting her with all this energy, and she absorbs it all and then just, like, reflects it back on him and just shreds him. Nice. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that she could do that. And then the next panel is her going, yeah, you forgot that I could do this, right? You forgot that I could absorb energy. Which is the thing that I love that comics do, is, like, there'll be a one panel, like, mention that someone can do something from 15 years ago, and then somebody finds it and is like, guess what? This is back. I can do that.
That's right. I did my research.
super fun episode. Again, like, I just love party episodes. That's it.
Yeah.
More baseball, more X-Men baseball, more Avengers in the backyard having a barbecue.
Yeah.
More superhero basketball, more trips to the mall. They deserve the time off.
They've earned it at this point, you know?
They have really, really earned it. So let's talk about the ending here. Over the course of the series, we have seen the Watcher get one, talk about how, listen, I don't get involved. I don't interfere. I just watch. That's it. I just watch. More and more, he is starting to get very subtly pulled into events, to the point where now, at the end of this episode, when Infinite Vision shows up in the skin of Ultron, surrounded by Ultron bots, the Watcher is legitimately surprised. I think clearly now we're heading into the team up where the Watcher is going to be like, okay, this is a thing I didn't see happening.
Yeah.
This can destroy the entire multiverse. Y'all need help. Party Thor. Listen, I know Captain Marvel, Party Thor. I know some people in the other parts of the multiverse that can come help you.
To quote my man, Doctor Strange, we're in the end game now, baby. And I feel like we're finally, as we were seeing a couple weeks ago, like, I think that these are all nicely dovetailing. And I feel like we're finally going to see, I mean, like you said, you got to see the Watcher break his code. And I think his breaking the code is going to be assembling his own version of, like, whatever this animated version is of, like, the ultimate team to fight, like, a galactic cosmic threat. I think he's going to put those together. Hopefully that's what I want to see. I want to see them, like, let loose.
I hope it involves Howard the Duck. I hope it involves Fandral and the Goat. I hope it involves Scourge the Executioner getting to be on the right side of history for once.
Yeah.
I know he he turned at the end, but like of Ragnarok, but that's beside the point. I'm hoping that we see the Grandmaster in action, not just behind the ones and twos releasing the foam. That would be really cool. When we come back, Zing and I discuss more Star Wars visions.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
We're back. Today, we're stepping out of the airlock and into a galaxy far, far away to continue our dive into the anime extravaganza that is Star Wars Visions. We're going to talk about three of the remaining six shorts that are our favorites and caused us to most sit up and take notice. The first being, and I think this is like the consensus number one of people who have watched this, The Ninth Jedi by Production IG. The daughter of a lightsabersmith discovers her own talents with the Force as she's pursued by sinister bounty hunters while attempting to deliver what may be the first new batch of lightsabers in many, many, many years. Cast includes Simu Liu as Zima, Neil Kaplan, Patrick Seitz, Greg Chun, Masioka, Kimiko Glenn, Andrew Cascino. It's a voice acting off the charts.
Yep.
And a hand-drawn animation style that just looks like gritty and dark and super weird and kind of scary.
Yeah.
I loved it. This is one where I'm like, man, I want to know more about what this timeline is about. I want to know more of the story.
Yeah. This is the first one I saw. Well, one of the few first ones that I watched where I'm like, oh, I want more of this. Like I would like to see like just a season of like what this reality is like.
Yeah, I love the Margrave. I love the Margrave like just hanging out inside this like pseudo Gundam suit, like eavesdropping on everybody until he's finally like, guess what? I'm here. I absolutely love this. Director Kenji Kimiyama said at a press conference in Tokyo, quote, "Japanese hand-drawn animation is very different than CG animation. It's very difficult to produce, even for a short story like this one. But for a title like Star Wars, myself and all the animators knew we had to give it everything we had. And I think it'll be something a little different with a classic hand-drawn style." What is your preference, if you had a preference?
You know, I think form follows function and like, it's whatever the medium is. But like, you know, that's my political answer. My real answer is like, I love hand-drawn 2D animation, like that's my favorite stuff. Like that's the one that it, you know, you can see the love, sweat, and tears poured in. Like we were talking about Akira before we started recording, and like one of my favorite things about that movie is just like the dedication to it. Like you can look up any like behind the scenes, like there are shots that will be like, you know, you're seeing like Neo Tokyo, and it's like five or six or seven different layers are just like basically like matte painting with like, you know, and you see the artist going in with like putting in like the individual lights for the skyscrapers and stuff. And like, I love that dedication. And this is one that really spoke to me because I love the animation of it all. And it you really feel those visceral punches and kicks when they come through and they slice someone.
Yes.
And like you just see it come apart. Like, also, this is the most violent of the Star Wars visions. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's people just like getting cut in half and then the top half like sliding off of the bottom half.
Yeah.
I love the hand drawn as well.
Yeah.
Akira is, you know, like, again, I'm not well-versed in anime by any means, but I've seen some stuff. Akira mm-hmm. being really the first one that I saw. And really, that's like, was the crossover anime.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was coming up. That was the one that people had heard about. Oh, Akira.
Yeah. Well, that was the one that Siskel and Ebert were like, we're going to give this two thumbs up. Like, that was when, like, oh, yeah. Wow. Like, they co-signed this, you know, cartoon, quote unquote. And, like, that's what really sort of brought it over here.
And I remember just being like, oh, holy shit, the detail of this is...
Yeah.
So crazily intricate. Mm-hmm. Everything from the way they did like motion blurs and those kind of like quick movement moves, and then the way the camera is so dynamic in that it's mm-hmm. You know, where they would amplify these movements so they look like really impressive by like having the camera swing around the character
as they are
moving. And it blew me away, and that's the same kind of vibe that mm-hmm. The Ninth Jedi has. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's my. I mean, I've talked about this, I think, in a previous episode, but like, I love that most of these shorts have been really circling the idea of like the gray Jedi a little bit more, like,
right.
like a little bit more of a. He's not afraid to get into a fight, and like Juro is 100% not afraid to get busy in these streets. Like, I love that. Like, he shows absolutely no mercy for this fight, which you don't see that a lot. I think Mace Windu is the only one that you see that like, oh yeah, he's no, you ain't getting out of this one alive. And like, I mean, that's also that's sort of called back in this, like, as their lightsabers light up, you see one of them turn from red to purple. You're like, oh, this is you sort of just like getting that quick character backstory with like just the change of color was really fun and really interesting.
Yeah, that kind of tapping into Star Wars mythology about the color of the lightsaber mm-hmm. in that really cool storytelling way is part of what made this feel really Star Wars. Because I think some of the Visions episodes, it's like there's a Star Wars veneer. This felt like an actual new Star Wars thing mm-hmm. in a really fascinating way. This is my favorite by far.
As you were saying that, there's been a lot of like Kyber crystal like lore and like a lot of details peppered throughout this series, which is usually reserved for like, you get like one or two passages in like a video game and like it'll go into it in like the novels and stuff, but like this one, like, you really like, they're really making an effort to like tell people what Kyber crystals are and like how they affect the world around them.
This was something I was thinking about, because we mentioned this, was talking about this with Saul and Chris, the producers on the pod, about how the prevalence of Kyber crystals like in the series at large. And I was wondering, you know, because like so much of like Japanese pop culture storytelling is about like a power source and the pros and cons of it, like mm-hmm. nuclear power, you know, electrical power, mm-hmm. harnessing some sort of energy and what that might mean for the environment. I was wondering if the prevalence of the Kyber crystal in these stories was in some way an outgrowth of that. Like, obviously, I don't know the answer. Yeah. Kyber crystals are part of Star Wars, but it felt, at least for the kind of like Japanese pop culture that I have consumed, it felt like very of a piece with that idea of like, let's think about where this power comes from.
Yeah,
let's think about what powers these things.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I would love to get some thoughts on that. That seems like that makes sense to me, but also, like you said, like, I'm from an outside looking in. I don't want to make any big statements here. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What is your second favorite Visions that you would like to talk about?
Oh, I give a shout out to the Elder. I think it's episode 7.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I mean, that to me was like, that was like the pizza resistance. Like, that's the one that like the 13-year-old kid in me that's like, I just want to see people fighting. I want to, like, anytime there's like an old grandmaster, especially if he's an old grandmaster who's evil, I'm like, sign me the fuck. That's exactly, that's what I want in every single anime I've ever seen.
Quick recap on The Elder by Studio Trigger. On a visit to the Outer Rim, Jedi Master Taijin, played by David Harbour, and his Padawan Don, played by Jordan Fisher, sense a disturbance in the Force, arriving in a far-flung village. On an even farther out planet, they learn of an old man, the Elder, played by James Hong, who came to town and left, hiking into the mountains. They go to investigate. They find his starship. And guess what? The Elder is a ex-Sith who left the Order before it dissolved. And he just wants to fight. That's it. He wants to measure his shit against anybody that yep. is any good with a lightsaber. So let's go and let's get it on. I love that. Let's just do this. That's it. Like, let's just get the action out. Let's see what it is. Let this genre show people what the vibrancy of anime is. It was a super fun episode. I really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, super. I mean, great choreography in the fighting. Also, I always love it when anime applies real life martial arts to it. Another series entry into the Star Wars Vision series where like the Jedi don't come off as complete peaceful like last resort fighting. Like Tai Jin is pretty competent lightsaberman, and that move that he does where like the Elder has two lightsaber katanas because of course he has to.
Yeah.
And like he comes in and he swipes and he just grabs his hand and like that Akita move and like disarms him and cuts it in half. I was like, you never like that's such a clean, that tells you so much about like his personality, like what this guy's thought process is, like how he approaches fighting. Also, like he's obviously been in a lot of fights and he's not afraid to like use his skills. And like that coupled with like the ultimate badass anime move where like he cuts off his lightsaber and just ducks under and like just sticks it in his chest and like he just pops him. I want to see, like, that's the type of like visceral gut punch stuff that I want to see more in the Star Wars stuff. Where, like, you know, it feels like a victory, but also it's just cool seeing like Jedi let their hair down and like do what needs to be done.
What to you distinguishes like a really good anime? Because I think for a lot of people jumping in, it's mm-hmm. so much material and it's so it's such a blast of energy and force and color that it can be hard to be like, I don't have a perspective yet on what mm-hmm. I like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like I said, like, I like shonen anime, which is like young boy, adolescent boys, like 13-year-olds, like stuff for teens. Like that's what I grew up with. First of all, like episode count, like a lot of anime has way too many episodes. So if like it's less than like 5 seasons, like I'm pretty much into it. But a lot of stuff I like is like animation wise. Like I like really vibrant, kinetic animation styles. Stuff like One Punch Man, My Hero Academia, like that has really fun stuff. Attack on Titan. But then also like whatever the theme is, like a lot of those shows, because I think they are aimed towards like younger people, is that like it's all about, yeah, you should do good with your friends. Like you should have, it should be about the idea of like the collective as opposed to like the individual. And like there's a way to mix those two where like you can be an individual and let your personality show through, but also still uplift others and do the good. And I think that's what really draws me. If they happen to have some cool robots in it as well, it's just icing on the top, you know.
I'm a big robot person.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Voltron, I think, is probably for people my gen, like a lot, an early intro, although we didn't understand that at the time to anime.
Yeah.
Robotech, similarly. Like, oh, I've always been fascinated about, like, people inside huge robots, Gundams, that kind of shit is just super, super cool.
Have you ever seen Patlapor? Have you heard of that series? It's the one mm-hmm. where like it's another mecha series, but they're just like cops in Japan. So it'll be like them, like they'll have like their big shootout stuff, but then also it'll just be like them helping move farming equipment that's broken down. Like it's very fun. It's very fun. Like it's the like a cab, except for those particular instances. Like I support those robot cops.
Yeah, what is it called all that?
Patlapor. Pat Labor. Yeah, very fun series.
Director and writer of The Elder, Masahiko Otsuka, said at the same Tokyo press conference we mentioned before, quote, "For some viewers, this series might be their first Star Wars experience, so I wanted to make something that you can enjoy without any knowledge of the rest of the story. So our story is not directly connected to any of the characters from the films, but it explores the idea of the Jedi Knights and the Master and Padawan dynamic in an older setting." I thought it did that quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also, you know, for a story that involves a Padawan, a Jedi trainee, I thought it was, first of all, hyper-violent and really scary in the sense that, like, I thought we were going to watch this Padawan get murked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is definitely not a place that Star Wars goes very often. So that was like a whoa.
Yeah. This is like there's I think the back half, particularly of the season, where it definitely leans towards like darker stuff. Like, you know, they have those pops with like the Tatooine Rhapsody, the Astro Boy one. I think it's like Toby or whatever that one was called. Like,
yeah, I'm gonna talk about that one next.
Yeah, those are peppered in, but like this one like was particularly dark, and also like this is just a complete side. Anytime I see a black person with a lightsaber, I'm already in. So like, part of me was like very worried that he was gonna get murked, but like I'm glad that my king pulled through. Shout out to my boy Dan.
I still want a lightsaber. Like, that's the thing. Since I was a kid, I've wanted one. Yep. I used to have Luke's from a Return of the Jedi, the green one. Mm-hmm. And this was like before, you know, there was any kind of tech. It was just basically a plastic tube, and they had cut notches in it in a specific way so that when you waved it, it made like a very, very like pinner, like woo sound. Yeah, but it was not good. Now the ones they have now are really cool in that you put batteries in them and they make the electronic sounds and they sound really great. But I still wanted like a legitimate, I would cut my hand off, no question. Yeah. But I still want one. Legitimately want one.
Yeah, look, I think there's a important time when technology gets to the point where you can have your very own lightsaber that you will instantly lose a limb with. And I think it'll be worth it.
And then finally, let's talk about T-Obi-Wan by Science Saru. As you mentioned, very reminiscent of Astro Boy, a robotic boy named T-Obi-Wan, a.k.a. Toby, would love to become a Jedi while working with his creator, Professor Mitaka, to turn a wasteland planet into a paradise. Shades of Pinocchio, etc. And, of course, T-Obi-Wan comes into conflict with a Sith Inquisitor. There is a big fight. Toby's droid friends help him out. And this is an interesting one because on the one hand, watching it, I had to turn my Star Wars brain completely off because there's a bunch of stuff in this that it's like, this doesn't exist. This would never happen. This doesn't happen in Star Wars. Droids can't wield the Force. Now, it later is revealed that he has a kyber crystal inside powering him. Mm-hmm. But still, like, droids can't use the Force. Mm-hmm. We've never really seen them successfully wield lightsabers in a way that would suggest they'd be able to hold their own against a Sith Inquisitor or anybody with any kind of training with it. But I really enjoyed this one because it was just, it honestly, it's all about the aesthetics for me. The visual style was so, like, bubbly and accessible and Pokemon-esque and Astro Boy-esque.
Yeah.
The droids were super cute. When the Inquisitor started like slashing them up, I was like, how fucking dare you? And that coupled with like the contrast of this really wonderful childlike rounded edges animation and illustration style with like really chaotic and vibrant and energetic action and violence was just like so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, we've said it a couple of times now, but like the Astro Boy of it all, with like just seeing that tied back to like, you know, this is distinctively like one of the first popular like animes that came out in Japan, and like seeing that mapped over the Star Wars world, and like I'm immediately thinking of everything that came after. It's like I'm thinking of like, this is like Mega Man, like you said, Pinocchio. Yeah. Like it's just so fun seeing that in that world, but then also there's like a sprinkle of like Miyazaki with like the bringing back plants on this world and like seeing those like grow together. Like that's their big mission, is like bringing life back to this planet. And then by that point, you're like, oh, I forgot that this was even Star Wars. Not in a bad way, but in the sense of like, it's nice seeing like this side of stuff. Like you don't need to see like the punchy stuff. Like I'm for that. Like I love when he came with the lightsaber, I'm not going to lie. But like up until that point, it was nice just seeing like, yeah, you know, I had a Padawan. It seemed like he died and like maybe we took his brain and put it, or like, you know, they did like a Grievous type deal with him. And I don't know, that whole slice of life stuff, like I like seeing stuff that happens after the fall of the Jedi. Like usually we get like was the PS4 game with the ginger Jedi and Deborah Wilson was his master. Fallen Order.
Star Wars Fallen Order.
Like I like seeing all that stuff. I like seeing like how they sort of pick up the pieces and choose their life and what they're doing now that they're on the run and in hiding.
I love that too. And it's just as a personal thing, like I love coming of age stories. Like I'm a sucker for it. Any young kid trying to find their way in a potentially dangerous world that they're only just beginning to realize is dangerous, is like crack cocaine for me. Like I love that conflict of like the naivete and innocence of youth versus the reality of the universe. Mm-hmm. And if you couple that with like an older character like Mitaka, who is obviously very protective of this younger character, but also like maybe because of the age, you know that this person can't be around much longer. And that is just the shit that gets me. Like,
yeah.
And so I was just like, man, I was sucked in immediately from the opening minutes of this episode. That's the stuff that really gets to me.
Yeah, you know two things. That character's not going to be around for a long time, and they're keeping some secret that's going to come to light at the most inopportune time.
Like, worst possible time. It's the stuff that I love. And it's, you know, to me, it's like storytelling is like a lot of the stuff that people are like, oh, you know, like, especially this was how it was for like nerd culture stuff. Like when I was like a teen, it was like not cool. Mm-hmm. But to me, a lot of this stuff like this, these kind of themes of like youth trying to figure it out, protected by like an older character, it teaches lessons and it involves themes which like are childlike in the sense that, you know, it's a stage of life you move past. But on the other hand, these are lessons that stay with you your entire life, and you consider them childlike because they are so fundamental.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's George Lucas' whole thing. He's like, these are for children, not in a pejorative sense, but like these are myths. And historically, myths have been, you tell them around a campfire, you're like, hey, don't look into the lake like Narcissus, or because you're going to be bad, Hercules went on the 12 labors to do the thing, whatever. Like, you're distilling down a very complex idea, moral idea, to like a simple thing that you could tell a kid and they can remember. Like, and I think that's why Star Wars works so well, is that it is just a myth that's like, hey, there's good and bad. Some could say light, some could say dark. And your job in life is to choose the light side, which we're equating with good. And I think that's very much why this the series works so well, particularly this episode, which is just like, once you put a kid in the equation, like, it's instantly made simplified, and you can sort of like distill those ideas down, which I think is what you want with this, with a series like this.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so much fun. Up next, I talk with Alex Damon of the YouTube channel Star Wars Explained to talk about what, if any, of this stuff could possibly be canon.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Time is a luxury for us, especially if you're a mom. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews, were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold-out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com for 20% off with code GETDIME. That's dimebeautyco.com, code GETDIME, for 20% off.
Welcome to The Hive Mind, where we dive deeper into a specific topic with the help of a guest panelist or interview. On today's episode, Alex Damon of the incredibly popular and incredibly good YouTube channel Star Wars Explains joins me. I'm a subscriber. I'm in the Patreon. I would urge you, if you have any interest in Star Wars, you want to know more about Star Wars, Alex and Molly do an incredible job. I would subscribe immediately if you are looking for that kind of content. So Alex is joining me today to talk about the possibilities in Star Wars Visions for some of this stuff entering canon. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for all the kind words.
You guys are the best. So first of all, for the uninitiated, for those who don't know, how canon is Star Wars Visions? What aspects of it are potentially canon?
I would basically just go with the assumption that none of it is canon for mm-hmm. now. That's the idea that the Lucasfilm producers put forth. They had this idea and they were like, just make anything you want. Don't worry about what's come before or what's going to happen. And some of the shorts are very clearly not set in the normal universe. Right. Some are. And so I think that there's potential for down the line, some of these things to be brought into canon. But for now, I'm just going to go under the assumption that it's all kind of in an alternate universe, basically.
What do you think? Which ones would be the easiest to kind of slot into existing canon or to use as like launch points for exploration of like a different era of Star Wars?
Hmm. I think the easy one is Tatooine Rhapsody, because that's the right. one that, you know, has Boba Fett and Jabba the Hutt and Tatooine yeah. in it. So I'm fully expecting someday to be reading a book and someone's just going to mention their favorite band, Star Waver. And I'll be like, there it is. Like, that's it. I think The Village Bride is another one that could pretty easily slide in because it does establish itself in the timeline after the Clone Wars. And it's so set apart on like just this strange planet with their own beliefs mm-hmm. and customs, like far away from the Empire. So that one seems like it would be pretty simple. The rest of them, like the duel, even though it's getting its right. own novel coming up, that one is pretty firmly, I think, outside of things. But it's definitely a case-by-case basis. I'm trying to think. I would love to see more from The Ninth Jedi. That was my favorite one.
Yeah, same here.
It was
so
good.
Really cool. And that's like that's an approach I feel like that we haven't seen yet. Like, we've gone back, you know, to the High Republic era. We've gone back and explored stuff in the past, but we've never jumped that far ahead. So that was really cool.
Yeah, The Ninth Jedi is something. I'm very much of the belief that the next time we do anything in the future, they should jump way into the future, in like way, way down the line. Because I love that about The Ninth Jedi, where it did some things where I was just like, oh, it stinks that the Jedi are still struggling to get restarted. But who knows what happened in the past
right.
100 or so years, 1,000 years, like anything could have happened.
I also love the aspect, like the idea that they actually haven't seen a lightsaber in a long time. Like, we're just where are they? We're looking for them. How do we, you know, like that was really cool. In addition to the very like creepy overall vibe of that particular short, it was really cool. I guess let's go down and let's go in order and just talk about some of the canonical questions here. So you mentioned the duel, which takes place in a remote village on an unknown planet. We get a duel between a mysterious Ronin and a Sith bandit leader. This, of course, is going to get a novelization, which I assume is, if it's popular enough, this character may find its way into canon somehow. But there are a lot of interesting, like, mismatched, like, parts, like, whether it's the design of the stormtrooper helmets that some of the bandits have, you know, how did they get an Imperial spy drone to wield samurai swords? What are your thoughts about this one in terms of if it were canon, when would it be and where?
I have an interesting perspective on this because I was lucky enough to get the book before the shorts came out.
Oh, cool.
So it was kind of, yeah, cool and a little, not disappointing, but just the first two chapters of the book are the short. And I kind of realized that after the first chapter, I was like, oh no, I'm being spoiled. it is what it is. But on the other hand, it was kind of cool to be watching the short and like know who the Ronin is and who the bandit is and know a little bit of extra history. But I think that based on the book, there's no way that this is going to be canon. Like, I think that they were very much like, this is its own thing. It's a completely different take, a completely mm-hmm. different history. I won't go too deep into that.
Please go deep if you feel as if you need to. I would love to hear it.
I'll just throw it like a mild, I'm not going to go into plot details so sure. much, just universe details for the book in case people want to read it. But it goes into like a different history for the Jedi and the
Sith. I see.
The Jedi are very different. The Sith are very different. It's all familiar stuff. Obviously, we have lightsabers and the dark side and the light side and ships. And I'm trying really hard to be delicate in what I say. But it's definitely an alternate take on Star Wars, just like Visions was supposed to be. So if I were to place it somewhere in canon, I would place it way, an even longer time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Mm.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
Let's go to Tatooine Rhapsody by Studio Colorido. This one, I think, is maybe the most interesting about where it would slot into canon if you were going to try and place it in there. Mm. A former Jedi Padawan becomes the singer of an aspiring rock band. He very nonchalantly wears his lightsaber on his belt as a microphone. And of course, a lot of the story takes place on Tatooine. We see the pod racing stadium. We meet a new son of Jabba the Hutt, Geezer, who is a new, I think is Jabba's, this is a new son. This would be a new son for Jabba, canonically, a new child for Jabba. I mean, you tell me, where would this fit into canon if it did fit in? And using context clues, where do you think it might fit in?
Right. I mean, I think it would have to go 5, maybe 10 years, somewhere in that area after Revenge of the Sith, since it starts off and we see Jay surviving Order 66, or what I assume is happening there, and he escapes. He's interesting, because I'm not sure if he's definitely part of like the family, as in the Hutt cartel.
Right.
I don't know if he's Rada's brother. I know everyone is desperate to know what happened to Rada the Hutt from the Clone Wars, but I feel like G is probably too old for Rada to have grown.
Right, he's probably 200-300 years old or something right. like that. And I guess like what they could say is like during the events of Clone Wars, when we knew Rada, it's like Jeez was like on the road, like traveling with the band. And so therefore,
yeah,
we never
and Jabba's probably
him,
like, yeah, it's just a phase. He'll come back. And when it was clear that it wasn't, yeah. he had to send Boba Fett out.
Another fun fact about this particular episode is Boba Fett is in it with the original trilogy look. What do we know about Boba Fett during this time frame, 5 to 10 years post Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah, not a ton. I guess like he'd be an up and comer as well, now that I think about it. Kind of
right.
That's a fun idea that Jabba sent his up and comer bounty hunter after this up and comer band. But yeah, I guess he'd be making a name for himself at this point. In canon, we don't have a whole lot for him right now, but he's been shown to be pretty ruthless at this time. Like, there's a reason he's the most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy, which he does point a blaster pistol at that unconscious dude. And I was like, oh, all right.
He does do that. I wonder if this is how Jabba's like love of music, like this is how he hires Max Rebo. You know what I mean? Like is through his becoming like the de facto manager of an indie rock band in the galaxy.
I love that idea. I love that. I'm trying to think if, because I don't think we see the Max Rebo band or anything like that in the Clone Wars movie or TV show.
Yeah.
So yeah, this could be sparking a love of music for Jabba, he doesn't even care about the music. He's just a slimy records dealer like that. That seems to fit too. But that's a really fun idea that he's got a like. I love Jedi Rocks. This is going to be the song that blows up, and I've got the band here.
I've got the band. I've got him. Like, and then of course it's like when it comes time to get paid, it's like he's like here's a little. Hey, how about this speeder? And then Jabba just like embezzles all the profits for everybody. He's like the colonel, like Elvis's manager. It's like they live in hand to mouth, and Jabba's just getting rich off their off their work.
I think in the Tales from the Jabba's Palace book back in the Legends days, he had a deal set up where Max agreed for the entire band that they would just work for food. And like everyone else was mad at Max for making that deal, but he was happy with it. So,
well, I mean, what are you going to go against Jabba? And there's tips too. You know, there's like perks if you're in the palace. Next episode, The Village Bride by Kenema Citrus. After the Great Jedi Purge, a Jedi named F and an advisor explorer named Valco participate and engage in the distinct wedding customs of an isolated village. Here we see separatist droids that have been reprogrammed. When would this take place, you think, if you had to try and slot it in?
Right. So we're, again, we're going after the Clone Wars. I don't think it takes place like 5 years down the line, especially with battle droids still in the mix. It seems like it would be closer to 1 or 2 years after Revenge of the Sith.
That's a fun one. Producer Kanako Shirasaki told StarWars.com, "This short introduces the Force in a unique way. People of planet Keela don't know the concept of the Force, but they interpret in their own way. They call it Majina and use it to connect them with the nature around them." We saw a lot of interesting recontextualizations of the Force and people's relationship to their kyber crystal and how the kyber crystal works within the lightsaber. What did you think of like those kind of new explorations of the Force and kyber and stuff?
I always love that stuff. I mean, I've always enjoyed new interpretations of the Force. I remember when Luke started talking to Rey about how, like, if the Jedi die, the light does not die. That's vanity. And there's so much more than just the Jedi and the Sith, but that's what we spend the most time on. So I love when Star Wars Rebels takes a look at things with L'Assad, or the Clone Wars goes to the Night Sisters and we see dark side magic. I love seeing new takes. And the Majina was fun where, we can't move rocks with our minds, but we can experience like the memories of the planet and stuff. I thought that was really cool.
Do you think they ever bring in like more of like the force sensitive animals as an animal lover? Like, do you think we ever see more of that stuff in the canonical Star Wars?
I think we've seen some cool things, especially in Star Wars Rebels, the Loth Wolves. They were pretty crazy. And then I feel like, again, in The Last Jedi, I feel like they touched on that with the Volticees, the little fox, the crystal foxes. Helping lead the way out. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing more of that in live action, kind of like the nature side of things coming in to assist instead of it always. I guess that's also a very Lord of the Rings thing, the eagles coming to save the day, but something like that. I think that fits in Star Wars too.
Let's talk about both of our favorites, also Cody's favorite, The Ninth Jedi, produced by Production IG. The daughter of a lightsaber smith discovers her own talents with the Force as she's pursued by sinister bounty hunters while attempting to deliver what may be the first new batch of lightsabers in many, many years to Margrave Jura. The Margrave! I just love the way she's like, "Oh, it's the Margrave!" It's so cute. This one was just super fun and just had my wheels turning about what a year's jump ahead Star Wars story could possibly be. This one was really cool. It's so hard. But if you had to guess, like, how many years ahead of where we are in the, let's say, the latest trilogy, like, marking it to that timeline, how far ahead might this be? And what from this would you like to see kind of make its way into canon?
Yeah, I'll just go, like, let's say 4,000 years. Like, really throw it out there. Give us a bunch of time in between where, maybe Rey did get the Jedi Order back up and running. And then, again, like, just cycles like the galaxy goes through, because that's happened in the past as well, where the Jedi have been whittled down to almost nothing and then they come back. So I'd rather see that than it's like, oh, it's 50 years in the future and, like, still the Jedi.
Still just a handful of us. And
it's funny. I think it would also work really well as an ancient history story for Star Wars, where it's like they're just now figuring out how lightsabers are made. And that's kind of why they're a little bit different. But man, I loved the kyber crystals that react to the wielder.
I really like that too.
I thought that was such a cool concept, which has been explored in Star Wars a little bit before, or they were going to in Return of the Jedi. And then they didn't do that. But when Darth Vader takes Luke's lightsaber in Jedi, it was going to be red. And I think they decided that'd be too confusing. So I like that they brought it back here and used it as like the signal of a twist that all of these guys are Sith and you're in deep trouble. So I'd love to see something like that, I think, explored in live action or canonically.
I love the way it explored also, like, just not just the kyber, but the way that there can be different kinds of lightsabers, like a lightsaber that where the length changes and stuff like that. Have they, is that something that they've explored before in Legends or anything where there can actually be lightsabers that are like clear or different colors than red and green, or that can change length?
Yeah, I think I remember in the Jedi Academy trilogy, I think Kip Duran had a lightsaber that could change color. It could definitely change length, but that's something that isn't really unique to the Ninth Jedi. Like, lots of lightsabers can change their length. We just never really see it utilized in a in a show or a movie. But it, the way that Kara could do it, it was almost through the Force. It wasn't like a technological thing. She just willed it to be longer or shorter. And then, of course, her lightsaber color changes over the course of the story. I love that we even see the Margrave. His lightsaber has like a little ring on it. He has like a little extra flair.
Well, now, it, in these shorts, there's a lot of, you know, we got some, obviously, again, this is non-canonical. We got some new sources of kyber crystal that don't exist in what we know about Star Wars. But where, canon-wise, where are the sources of kyber crystal right now that are for sure?
Well, Ilum is like the big one. That's kind of the sacred Jedi spot.
Yeah.
But they've mentioned Jeddah as a place that has Kyber, Lothal. I mean, Kyber crystals can be found all around. It's just that there's certain areas like Ilum where they're found in high concentration. But it doesn't, like, that never stood out to me where I was like, oh, well, Kyber crystals can't be here. It was just like, no, it's just another planet that has them in that ring, which I thought the mining catapult things, I thought that was a really cool idea.
Pitch, finally, like, why don't, I'd love to hear you pitch your personal, like, Star Wars Visions episode. Like, what would you love to see?
Oh, man. I mean, I think I probably would have gone back in time.
To, like, what era?
Old Republic, maybe the Jedi just starting to begin. Maybe we get into the 100-year darkness, which is when the Sith split off from the Jedi and they actually start to fight. I think that would be fun. Although, after seeing Visions, I'm like, my big criticism of the series is that they were all Jedi stories. It would have been fun to see something else, like a starfighter pilot story or just a bounty hunter. Starwaver was, I think, the closest to that, where it was more scoundrels. So maybe I would say, I still want to play with the Jedi and the Force, so maybe we do the Mandalorian Wars or something like that.
Yeah, that's the one that I would pitch. not, and I would pitch it, because one, I'm super interested in that era, and two, I feel like we could get it made because the pitch would be, hey, this is providing context to the Mandalorian, the show, about their culture and, you know, how important their relationship with Beskar is and their different confrontations with the Jedi. Like, this is important context to that story. So what about a Mandalorian Wars story?
I feel like we could have a lot of fun with Mandalorian armor as well. Like, anime Mandalorian armor sounds fun, and then eventually you get like a Mandalorian Gundam or something huge. Just
oh my
absurd.
God, that would be, I can, Cody would flip out. That would be super cool. Check out Star Wars Explained on YouTube. Alex and Molly do the best job in the business at explaining everything about Star Wars to you. If there's a show that comes out, check in there. If you want to know the entire timeline of the Star Wars universe, that's there for you. If you want to know about Star Wars Visions, if you want to know the Bad Batch, go to Star Wars Explained on YouTube. It's great. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Up next, the Endgame. We're in the Endgame now, folks, and this week, in honor of Ziggs, the Amazing Spider-Man number 80, coming December 1st, run, don't walk, to your local comic shop to make this thing fly off the shelves. We're playing Fit Check Spider-Verse Edition. We are going to rank our top three favorite Spider-Man universe costumes. And that can be heroes, that can be villains, that can be, if you're like, man, J. Jonah Jameson really wore the shit out of that suit that particular day, that's fine. Are you ready, Cody? Would you like to go first?
I'll do the honor. I will take the honor of going first.
Okay.
First off, you got to give a shout out to the Spider-Verse suit for Miles Morales. One of the cleanest to ever do it.
And
also perfectly captures what that character is with, like, you know, if you when you, it just distills down like what a black young kid should be. Like, you have his suit, you have that, it's like, it's, you know, it's a Peter's original red suit, spray painted over, giving his own identity. But like, what all ties together is the fucking Jordans. And like, it's crazy to think that like, when I think of, like, I think when most people think of like Miles Morales now, they think of like the Chicago ones, he's got his suit on, but like, really, like, that was the first time that like you saw that out in large. So like, I got to give it up for the Spider-Verse suit.
I completely agree with you. I also have the Spider-Verse suit on my on my list. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
When he dives off the Empire State Building and it's you're just like, yes. Everything about it is cool. And as you said, like, you know, the trick with character design is, can the costume convey something about the character?
Yes.
And it does it.
Mm-hmm.
My next pick is also a costume design that I feel like conveys the character. And to me, I think it's the most exciting costume design, like, I don't know, in the last 10 years, in a long time. It's Spider-Gwen.
Oh,
Gwen Stacy from Earth 65 with the white and red kind of like pinkish spider suit with the hood. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, holy shit, designed by Jason Latour.
Yeah.
It is just so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Any hero's costume with a hood built into it, like, it's kind of athleisure and it's kind of a superhero. All the way in. I fucking loved it. It first appears in issue number 2 of the Edge of the Spider-Verse storyline. It's just super rad, super cool.
Perfect choice. Another Spider-Verse suit, from the comics, is Spider-Punk. Like, such a bizarre comic book swing.
Weirdo.
Yeah. In this universe, I guess Peter is a British punker who still plays in a punk band before he goes around time twipping and quipping. So like, I love the guitar accessory that he has. I love the spiked Liberty spikes in the Spidey suit. 10/10 costume design. No notes on that one.
So let's see. I've got two. I mean, this is very basic, but I'm just going to do it. The symbiote suit.
Oh,
that's a good one. You know, its origins in the Secret Wars crossover event.
Mm-hmm.
Peter gets this black goo that becomes his suit. Eventually, all sorts of hijinks occur when he realizes it's alive and is making him swing through the canyons of New York City at night and do various things that he doesn't even remember doing. Eventually, they get it off of him. Reed Richards helps by blasting it with sonic waves. This was like a fucking earthquake when I first started reading comics. I mean, you know, like, Spider-Man really, other than like the webs under the armpits and some shit around the eyes, like, had not, the costume was static, folks.
Yeah.
For 30 years or whatever it was, 25 years, like, it had never changed. And then the black suit came in and just switched everything up.
Yeah.
And the game was forever altered. Like, it was so cool when the black suit came out.
Still one of the cleanest suits in the game.
Absolutely immaculately fucking clean. And then the ability to like dive into this whole other backstory that opened up an entire other wing of Spider-Man lore with both heroes and villains that then became heroes with the introduction of the symbiote and its various abilities. Super cool. Love the symbiote suit. It's just it is a defining landmark of my childhood. What is your last suit?
I am also going with a villain turned sometimes anti-hero turned usually back to villain. I'm going with Doc Ock's white pimp suit. I got to give a shout out to my bowl cut king walking up in the cut with his white suit. Got it tailor made probably in lower Manhattan. Got his fuck up with his four holes for his arms to come through. Like, we got to give it up to my man with the sunglasses on.
Got it. That, I mean, like, sometimes he'd have the little, like, you know, the little carnation in lapel, that fucking square cut of the shoulders, so my guy looks like a linebacker.
Yep.
He knew what was going on.
Like,
he
knew
what it was. Dude, he knew what it was about. That is a great, great call. Love that suit. Special mention for one of my least favorite suits, the Iron Spider comic suit. It's hideous. I hate it. It's disgusting.
What did you think about the MCU version of it?
It was okay. The MCU version was fine.
Yeah.
Was better. But like the comics version, Tony Stark, the guy has never had, like, he's not what I would call a tasteful guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand the aesthetics, the aesthetic game. He just is like, you know, form should follow function.
Yeah.
And there's just too many bells and whistles. You can tell he's a car guy with that suit. Didn't love it. I just got to shout that out because I found it gross. And also just like, I don't, this is just me. And I had the same problem with the MCU version of the suit, but I get it. I don't like the legs. Like, I don't want the spider legs in it. That's it. It's too much. It's kind of like why it's, this is why Mickey Mouse wears gloves, because if he takes off the gloves, you realize he's a fucking rat because you see the rat claws. Similarly, when Spider-Man has the spider legs, you're like, oh yeah, that's a spider. I'm kind of creeped out by those.
Yeah.
No,
not as
don't
endearing.
Do that.
Yeah, it's too much.
I don't need it. That's it for the end game. Let us know whether you agree or couldn't disagree more. Share your answers using the hashtag XRV endgame. That's hashtag XRV endgame. Zig, thank you so much for joining us. Alex Damon, thank you for joining us as well. Zig, where can people find you next?
You know what? Find me at all them social medias, yay for Zig. I think as of this week, when this episode drops, I have a short story, a backup in Miles Morales number 30.
Let's go.
10-year anniversary. I had a very emotional post about it. I remember 10 years ago, I was running to the comic book shop because I heard there was a Black Spider-Man.
To
say that 10 years later, I have my own short story in it is a god dream. So, like, check that out. I would love for people to read
that. I mean, what an amazing turn of events. Like, for real. Like,
it's weird,
congratulations,
dude.
Zig.
Thanks,
it must
man.
Be... it. I can't imagine what it feels like. It must feel amazing. I mean, you know, similarly, but much less cool, the fact that I get to talk about this stuff that I've loved since I was a kid is truly a blessing.
Yeah, we're
living. Congratulations to you. Pick that issue up and don't forget Amazing Spider number 80, December 1st. Pick it up. Folks, next week our episode will be dropping on Thursday, October 6th, in order for us to cover the finale of Marvel's What If on Disney Plus. This is the way, and that's it for X-Ray Vision this week. See you next time. X-Ray Vision is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Chris Lord and Saul Rubin. The show is executive produced by me, Jason Concepcion, and Sandy Gerard. Caroline Reston and Carlton Gillespie are our consulting producers, and our editing and sound design is by the great Sarah Gibolaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you, Brian Vasquez, for our theme music.
Thank you, Heimdall, for being here on this remote interview. I'm not sure why we had to be on a Zoom call, if you can see and hear everything, but here we are, so...
You know, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but how would you speak to me, right? See, it's mainly for your benefit.
Great. I'm glad that you think that. Okay. You came very highly recommended by Thor.
Thank you.
Not sure if that's a good thing or bad thing, but...
We're bros.
Oh, okay. Good.
That's my bro. It's my bro, you know, the son of the king. I don't know if you know that.
FYI. Very familiar with Thor. He once threw a massive part in my backyard and destroyed a beautiful fountain I spent months building, but that's not a here and there. So I don't know if you know what the job is, but...
I do know. I've heard tell a little bit about it, but okay. Tell me more.
So you are going to wield the Holfind, this gorgeous sword here, and
awesome.
It triggers the Bifrost to go across the Rainbow Bridge, to go across the universe, Nine Realms. Also, you are responsible for seeing and hearing everything that happens across all time and space.
I got that. Yeah, I got that. I think I put that down there on my resume, if you have it right there. Yes. Sees and hears everything in the universe. That's me. I see it all. all seeing, all hearing, all knowing, the whole bit. If a mouse farts in Jotunheim, I hear it, I see it, I smell it, I know about it. I won't tell you about it. I could mention all the mice farting on all the different realms right now, but that's, I keep that to myself. I just mention mainly the important stuff, but so, I do see and hear everything. That's absolutely
so true. You saw then when Thor destroyed my fountain that I had spent so much time working on, and what? You just didn't say anything like, hey, maybe don't do that.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's different, you know, there's different, it's situational when you would mention stuff. Obviously, if it rises to the level of, you know, a threat to a realm or something like that. But if it's just if it's just something that's going on in a backyard, some like minor property damage, I don't really see the need to mention that to Odin, who I believe was sleeping at that time anyway.
Okay.
So yeah, do I have the job or what?
I guess no one else applied. So I guess you got it, but I'm just you know, try and watch the universe if you can, and maybe just try to keep Thor in check if you can. Just
by the way, your Amazon packages are being dropped off at your house right now.
Shit, I gotta go. Okay, fine. I guess you got the job. Congratulations.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.